Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast. We're online at soundcheck.org.
Shake it up, baby.
Shake it up, baby.
Twist and shout.
Twist and shout.
Come on, baby. Now.
Come on, baby.
Come on and work it on out.
Come on and work it on out.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's pretty likely you know this song, Twist and Shout, whether it's the original Isley Brothers version or one of the many cover versions in the decades since, most notably by the Beatles. But you might not know the story behind one of its authors, Burt Burns. Well, that is about to change, because this year, a new stage musical is on the way, also a documentary about this songwriter and producer, and a new biography has just hit the shelves. It's called Here Comes the Night, The Dark Soul of Burt Burns and the Dirty Business of Rhythm and Blues. It's by music journalist Joel Selvin, who sat down with our producer, Joel Meyer, in what might have been Soundcheck's first ever Joel on Joel interview.
Burt Burns, he worked alongside some of the biggest names in Brill Building history. We're talking Lieber and Stoller, Jerry Goffin and Carole King. Why don't we know Burt Burns' name better?
Well, Burns died in 1967 at the age of 38 after a long-expected heart attack. He had rheumatic fever when he was 14 and was told he wouldn't live to be 21. But I think more importantly, Burns made a lot of powerful enemies during his lifetime, especially the Atlantic Records partners Ahmet Erdogan and Jerry Wexler, who really worked hard to erase him from their company's history. When I started to write this book, and I called Wexler and told him I was going to do that, he said, "I don't know where he's buried, but if I did, I'd on his grave."
Ugh.
Neil Diamond, whose career Burns started, doesn't speak his name. Wrote a history of his early recordings for liner notes to a reissue a couple years ago. And he mentions everybody associated, but he doesn't even drop Burt's name. Now, Burt Burns signed him to the label, sang on his records, changed the name of his first hit to Cherry Cherry, did all the mixing. I mean, he made Neil Diamond who Neil Diamond became, and this guy can't even mention his name.
So, I mean, Ahmet Erdogan, Jerry Wexler, Neil Diamond, these are all people that, you know, we as music fans know and trust. You know, why shouldn't we believe them about Burt Burns? Why should people get to know the story of Burt Burns?
Those people were trying to take advantage of Burns. You talk to his friends, and it's a different guy. He was a happy-go-lucky, all music, all hit records, all collaborative ethos. Ellie Greenwich sat and cried recalling him to me. Jeff Berry loved him. People loved Burt Burns.
We'll find out a little bit more about his rise through the music industry. But first, you as a music fan should hear some more songs that Burt Burns had a hand in. We opened up the segment today with Twist and Shout, the Isley Brothers version. Let's hear a song by the McCoys, a song that began life as My Girl Sloopy and then turned into Hang On Sloopy from 1965. On Sloopy by the McCoys from 1965, a Burt Burns song. Also, a song you'll know very well, associated with Janis Joplin. This is Piece of My Heart by Big Brother and the Holding Company from 1968.
Honey, you know I did. But each time I tell myself that I'm
Peace of My Heart by Big Brother and the Holding Company from 1968. I think the second version of that Burt Burns song. Before that, we also heard Hang On Sloopy, which Joel Selvin, author of the Burt Burns biography Here Comes the Night, that was originally My Girl Sloopy, and then it turns into Hang On Sloopy. How does that transition happen?
My Girl Sloopy was a 1964 record by The Vibrations, written and produced by Burt Burns. And it is just a badass piece of Afro-Cuban R&B. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the most pure Havana rock on the charts ever. I mean, that song was recorded like 15 times that year. There were four different chart versions. The Yardbirds did a version. The Little Caesar and the Consuls had a huge hit in Canada with it, much bigger than the McCoys. And I mean, even Ramsey Lewis, the jazz pianist, did an instrumental version. It was just like an instant classic.
You describe in the book the McCoys version as Burt Burns hitting the trifecta, like it's a horse race. It is, he owns the song. It's
He wrote the song, published the song, and had it out on his record label.
And so for him, that is... that's reaching a pinnacle of his career. Let's back up a little bit and talk about who this guy, Burt Burns, is. Born in the Bronx, a Jewish kid, and grows up really loving the, especially the Latin music that he's hearing growing up. How does mambo, how does he encounter mambo, and why does he embrace it?
You know, mambo was just a huge phenomenon in the New York City boroughs in the late 40s, early 50s. All kind of emanates from the Machito, who started his Afro-Latin jazz band up in Spanish Harlem before the war, but didn't really move downtown until after the war. And once that happened, it started to spread the Palladian ballroom and all that. In the Bronx, there was a small place called the Tremont Terrace. And all the mambo bands, Noro Morales, Tito Puente, Tito Rodriguez, worked this room. That's where Burns started the mambo dancing and met up with Sid Bernstein, who was running the little mambo hall, and they tried to start a record company, and that was in 1950. They put out one, two records, and then they were out of business in a minute. Burns, it wasn't until he was 30 years old that he got into the music business, and he got a job as a song plugger for a music publisher, $50 a week. Well, the first year, he was writing songs, not too much going on, really sort of mundane, gimmicky songs. Once he tripped across the combination of mambo and rock and roll, like we heard in Twist and Shout with the Isley Brothers, he found his voice and almost immediately became successful. Within 2 years of being in the record business, he was living in a penthouse, making hit records, and had a fishbowl stuffed with royalty checks he was too busy to take to the bank. Burns's musical style was so strong that other musicians and other record producers recognized it. He's not known for it amongst the record-listening public, but let me think about this for a minute with me. The Phil Spector record with the Righteous Brothers, You've Lost That Loving Feeling, goes to a middle eight where Spector puts the two vocalists up against each other and go, yeah, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And underneath it, it goes, boom, 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 boom.
I'm talking with Joel Selvin, longtime pop critic at the San Francisco Chronicle. He's the author of the new book, Here Comes the Night: The Dark Soul of Burt Burns and the Dirty Business of Rhythm and Blues. It's out now. I'm Soundcheck producer Joel Meyer. You've alluded to his early years in the business. He comes in as a successful songwriter, then becomes a full-fledged record man, like with his own label. How did he make that transition?
Well, this again goes back to the heart condition. This was a man with a short time to live, driven with ambition, and as soon as he started being successful, he started piling success on top of success. He went from a songwriter with no hits to a songwriter who produced his own records and made hits. As a producer, he moved into Atlantic Records, where he supervised the career of Solomon Burke, who was the only star on Atlantic Records at that point.
When your baby leaves you all alone, and nobody calls you on the phone, don't you feel like a cry? Don't you feel like a cry? Well, here I am, honey. Come on, you cry to me.
I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know how well you can answer and how much you know about it, but. In reading your book, Joel, I was shocked to learn of the influence of organized crime in the music business. How much does the mob help him make that ascent?
Okay, that's a huge part of the book, because it's really important to draw the relative moral universe in which Burns operated. These guys in the New York R&B scene were a click above a racket. And nobody paid any attention to them, you know. The graft and corruption that was rampant with radio stations, the refusal to pay royalties, the theft of songwriting credits. I mean, this stuff was commonplace.
Let's talk about the song that gives your book its name, Here Comes the Night. Every time I hear this song, Joel, I'm reminded this is an amazing song. It is a really weird song. It's strange sounding. Tell me a little bit about the genesis of this song.
Well, Burns liked to push his singers to the edge of heartbreak. And it didn't matter to him whether the song was a love song or he wanted his singers crying. He wanted his singers in intense emotional upheaval. So Here Comes the Night was a song that he presented to them, which featured young Van Morrison, when he went
the
to
sort
London,
of Irish rockers.
They'd been signed to Decca Records in the United Kingdom, and Burns went over to England in 1963 after Twist and Shout hit, and ran some experimental sessions that were the first time an American producer worked in English recording studios. They were a little backwards in England. I mean, the engineers wore lab coats, okay, in the studios. The song has pieces of it in a number of other Burns songs. There They Go by the Exciters is about the same thing. There's a Benny King song where he just comes to a stop break and shouts, "Here comes the night." Lyrically, it's about a guy seeing his girlfriend walking with another guy. But somehow this takes on this dramatic, dark foreboding in the chorus.
Well, I think you can hear the darkness that Joel Sullivan, my guest, is talking about. Here is that song, Here Comes the Night, recorded by them, hit in 1965.
With another guy, his arm around her like it used to be with me. Ooh, it makes me want to die.
That's Here Comes the Night by them from 1965, a song penned by Burt Burns, the subject of the book Here Comes the Night by my guest, Joel Sullivan. Joel, who's playing guitar on that song?
That's a 20-year-old British session player named Jimmy Page.
And how much did he help shape the sound of that song? The guitar line in that song is one of my favorite parts.
So that lick comes off of a record that Burns did with a singer named Marv Johnson. And it's just thrown away in that record, just a little dut, 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 dut. And he used it, Burns was great at recycling parts, And he used it when he got to England in the record and showed it to Page. Page changed the guitar positions and just sprayed gold into the track.
I'm talking with Joel Selvin, author of Here Comes the Night, here in the Soundcheck studio. I'm Joel Meyer. So we've talked a little bit about Burt Burns, his early years as a songwriter, transitioning into a staff producer role in the early 60s at Atlantic Records. And then there's Bang Records. That's his sort of move towards his own piece of the pie, and kind of bankrolled by Atlantic, right?
Yeah, 17 grand.
17 grand.
That's what they put up, yeah.
and then in the book you describe the offices, which is really just a room with him and a secretary in it.
It did move to a larger suite after they had some success, but originally it was one room, two desks.
How successful was Bang Records? I mean, that's not a label that I really knew before digging into your book.
Well, the first record was The Strange Loves, I Want Candy. That was a top 10 record. Mm-hmm. About 3 months later, they had the number one hit with Hang On Sloopy. So out of the box, that was a pretty good start.
And then it goes on to release records from Neil Diamond by Van Morrison. It sounds like it was pretty successful.
Well, very. He also started a subsidiary for R&B called Shout Records. And Freddie Scott had a number one R&B hit in 1966 for him with Are You Lonely For Me, Baby.
You've been working on this book, essentially, you've been working to tell this story for about 15 years or so. What for you really struck you about the Burt Burns story?
Well, like you say, Joel, I heard his life in those songs. I heard his pain. I heard his despair. I heard his medical condition. I heard his panic. And that's so uncommon for records of that era. They were light, frothy, you know, don't say nothing bad about my baby, you know, teenage stuff. This stuff wasn't teenage. This stuff was coming out of some dark, deep place in his soul.
Well, Joel Selvin, before we let you go, I need to ask you about your favorite Burt Burns song. We've heard some of the major songs that he was a part of that he either wrote or helped get made. Tell us about a more obscure Burt Burns song that is close to your heart.
Well, there's so many. It would be hard to pick one. But what I want you to hear today, Joel, is the original version of Peace of My Heart by Irma Franklin, Aretha's sister. It's Paul Griffin, the piano player's introduction, is so stately, and it sets this thing up. And she sings this with more calm, more depth, more, what I want to say, emotional realism than the kind of hysterical version that Janis does. And you can really feel Burns' pathology in this version.
Well, we're going to leave you with that. Joel Selvin is the longtime music journalist for the San Francisco Chronicle. His new book is called Here Comes the Night, The Dark Soul of Burt Burns and the Dirty Business of Rhythm and Blues. Joel, thanks so much for being on Soundcheck.
Great to be here.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer.